Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio.
The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com. Or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table through the studios of KHOI Community Radio. And Community Radio is just a real joy to be part of. We talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. Before we start our show today, let's start our show today. The first thing I'd want to do is to salute some excellent endeavors. Three cheers go out to Zalia Avant-Garde for being the spelling bee winner this year.
The national champion.
She's from New Orleans, and she's evidently also pretty good on the basketball court, too. Did you have spelling bees when you were growing up in your school?
Yes, but I'm a terrible speller. Ah. It's my mother who was the good speller.
Oh, see?
You know, spell check is for me. Oh, boy.
Ah. Now, I always liked the spelling bees, but I was never really very good at it because you had to spell orally, you had to spell verbally. If I could kind of write it on my hand, if I could write it down and I could see it, then I can spell.
Because you're visual, Lana.
That's right.
So anyway, this young lady is the first Black female child to win that. So congratulations.
I like her. Avant-Garde. What a lovely name. Three cheers for her. Big things happening for her in the future. And also there is another more local excellent endeavor here. I want to do a shout out here to the three-time champion of the winning wiener dog racing wiener dog person, dog. The dog named Millie Jo from Story City won.
Oh, she's from Story City. A local winner. Well, where was the contest?
Prairie Meadows Racetrack annual wiener dog race, which was held, I believe, on the 20th.
Where's Prairie Meadows?
Down by Des Moines.
Oh.
Prairie Meadows, you know, the gambling place. Too,
they have racing.
Okay, this is good. And there is a little picture of this fantastic little wiener dog flying. No feet are touching the ground. Evidently, she's really good at it. This is her third time winning this thing. I can imagine what it's like getting these dogs all lined up. Some dogs stop to look at other dogs. Some run into the crowd. Some are still at their handler's feet. And some run toward their catchers. You have somebody who lets the dog go and somebody is their catcher, and evidently Millie Jo has been really good at this. Millie Jo is off like a rocket, and she's good.
Hope the catcher is allowed to like hold a treat out.
I don't know how they get her there, but there she was, and three cheers. We have a winning wiener dog, and this is a little technicality here. Millie Jo is not a full-fledged dachshund, but cuter than a bug anyway. Millie Jo is a Sweeney, which is a dachshund shih tzu mix. So really cute little dachshund, kind of fuzzy all over.
It's just like the old jumping frog contest. Yeah. Do you remember that Mark Twain story, The Jumping Frog of Calaveras County?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. Anyway, Millie Jo is 4 years old, and she lives with her family in Story City, Iowa. Three cheers to the winner of the wiener dog race in Iowa. Very good. Very good. It's not always you have something quite so famous happening.
Right. In Story City.
Well, very good. Oh, today on the Donalana Kitchen, we want to take a look at the garden and at food labels and recipes. And we're in midsummer here. Let's celebrate summer bounty. Let's talk about food from the garden. Donna, let's talk about beans.
Yeah, we're full of beans today. Shell beans, bush beans, green beans, pole beans, dry beans. We're going to talk about all the kinds of beans.
Good. So
I want to start by, Lana, I want you to make the distinction between what a shell bean is.
Well, shell beans are sort of new to me here. I mean, we have to get out the recipe books and try this out. Shell bean. If a bean grows, it starts out being a green bean.
Right. And all the beans are from the same family. Not peas, but beans.
You can do that. Eat them as green beans. And those green beans generally are either bush, short plants, or pole beans, the kind that run up high. All beans are like that. Okay. But some are bred to be dry beans. Storage beans. Kind of make soup out of, and pork and beans and that kind of thing. In between, if you catch some of those beans just right as they go to maturity, before they get hard, they're called shell beans. You can open up that pod and they are large. If you let them go, they just turn hard and you can plant those beans again. Shell beans are very good. They're rather soft.
And so it's basically a bean that would go on to dry, mm-hmm, like that mm-hmm. you would buy in the grocery store in a bag, for mm-hmm, example. Mm-hmm. But you eat them before they've dried out.
Mm-hmm. So, timing.
Yeah. And when you cook a shell bean, it doesn't take nearly as long as cooking it in its dried form. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of treats from those kinds of beans that you can only you cannot buy shell beans usually at the store. I've never seen them. It's something you have to grow yourself.
I mean, okay, you can get get lima beans or something frozen, but no. That screws it up. It's the time to go to the garden or go to a farmer's market and talk really nicely to a farmer and see that we'll talk about shell beans. So you ran across a few recipes.
Well, I know in the South, for example, there's a tradition of butter beans, which are a shell bean, because this time of year, you will find those at the farmer's mm-hmm. market. Yes. Sort of the way Europeans do fava beans. You can buy them in that soft state, and they are still a lot of work to shell and cook, but everybody loves them. But shell beans are something that are very special that I don't think anybody at the farmer's market here is selling them.
Oh, we just don't know what to do with these things. Beans are not just beans. Beans have all different kind of tastes and mouthfeel, and they're just so good. I planted some that I specifically am going to use for shell beans this year. They're called cannellini beans, and you can find those in cans too. They're a white bean.
Yeah, they are a real traditional Italian. They're a little bit different than the American white bean, but not terribly. You can substitute one for the other. And like I, for example, bought some dried ones that I had to order online. Specifically, they are touted as they used to be the favorite cannellini variety of what's her name? The Italian. Now I can't remember her name. Anyway,
one of them Italian.
One of those Italian cookbook writers that everybody loves.
Anyway, I found this variety in one of my favorite seed catalogs, which is Fedco mm-hmm.
I hope you'll let me taste them in their shell state. Great. That will be interesting.
It says these are called Silver Cloud cannellini. Ooh. And I've grown these before. So, and I know that they'll be sort of pinkish. There's each pod contains up to 5 plump white seeds instead of many little ones, the big plump seeds. And these make an amazingly early and absolutely superb shell bean. And I'm looking forward to them. They're just starting to set beans now. They're a bush bean, so they look like any other bean coming up, little flowers coming up. And yes, bunnies and deer are nipping off the top, so they must be good, but I'm sure I'll have plenty. So those are cannellini beans.
Well, a nice treatment for a shell bean, and you see this done with fava beans a lot, is to simply cook them, maybe throw an onion and some thyme and a bay leaf into the pot. You don't have to cook them that long. You just get them soft, like the consistency that you would for a mashed potato, maybe.
Yeah.
And then you mash them, and then you serve them on a piece of toast with some garlic in mm-hmm. there somewhere, maybe even in the cooking or mm-hmm. whatever, because then you really get the flavor of the bean. They are subtle but really delicious.
And remember, beans are really, really good for you in whatever variety or whatever state they can be.
Well, and right now we're having lots of green beans, which is, they come in colors, purple, green, the wax bean color. Then there's Romano beans, which are also sometimes called flat beans. Those are actually my favorite. I have seen them at the farmer's market. Yeah. And are you growing some too, aren't you, Lana?
I must confess that I have had a real run of bunnies this year, and they wiped out my dragon tongue beans and my Romano beans.
Oh.
However, I do have, well, like I said, cannellini beans are coming and other stuff is coming, and I do have pole beans coming yet. So you always hedge your bets, especially when you're thinking of bunnies. Some of my favorite pole beans, and we were talking about this earlier, pole beans, the kind of beans that need a trellis, because those vines can be,
they go all over the place,
6 to 8 feet tall. They just keep on going, and that is one of their charms. Bush beans kind of set their beans kind of all at once in a week or two. There they are, and then they're done. But
well, at least the rabbits can't reach up and get the pole beans.
That's true. Then, but a pole bean, it's sort of like an indeterminate tomato. It keeps setting flowers.
That's a very good analogy.
It keeps setting flowers and keeps setting beans, and you can just keep picking. I've grown, thanks to Ethie and Stephen Cannon for turning me on to the variety called Ideal Market Bean, which is a green pole bean. And Don and I were talking about this earlier. Pole beans used to be pretty notorious for having a string in them.
Yeah, that's why they're called string beans.
And you had to string them down that little, the place kind of where the zipper is, where the where the line is on each bean. There was, well, it probably needed it to grow. There was a membrane that you had to rip out of each one.
Right, you had to break the top off and pull the string down because it was really chewy and could be unpleasant. But breeding in the last, I don't know, 20 to 30 years has almost all but eliminated the strings from the string beans. Almost all the varieties grown now.
How nice. Another variety I'm growing first time this year is called Cherokee Trail of Tears bean, which is
is that a shell bean or a?
See.
Uh-huh. Oh, it looks like a green bean.
Yeah. A little black bean, but it'll be a green bean when I pick it early. And also another one I'm growing is the rattlesnake snap bean, which is a mottled.
Right. And those are generally a shell. That's generally, shell bean. Yeah.
So there's a lot of good stuff coming. And I've learned to like pole beans too.
Well, and another thing you have to remember when you're buying dried beans, the older the bean is, and they will store for years, so you have to be careful. The older the bean is, the longer it's going to take to cook. So if you're got some beans in your pantry that have been sitting there for a year or two, you're going to have to cook them a long time because they do continue to dry and degrade.
Remember, soak the beans first. We often forget about time when we cook. Taking time to soak things overnight helps.
Yeah, and when they say overnight, they do mean overnight. And you can soak beans up to 2 or 3 days, as a matter of fact. If it's real hot weather, you might want to change the water. But you can soak and soak and soak and soak. And then, of course, there is the old pressure cooker method, which does help almost all of the dried beans. Now, the other thing about green beans, because that's what's really glorious right now, aside from the Romano beans, which are those, they're usually like almost a half an inch to 3/4 inch wide. And yeah. They have a sweeter, nuttier flavor, whereas almost all of the other regular pole beans have, even though they look different, they all have a similar flavor. Yeah. Now, Alice Waters, in her book, Chez Panisse Vegetables, the famous California chef, says, she's talking about, she says yellow wax beans and purple beans are best eaten before their full color has developed, when they are still tinged with green. And I think that's true because, you know, wax yellow beans, people often don't pick the wax beans until they're really completely yellow. And then they are a little tough.
Huh.
So that's
something to look for. She also talks about, and this is something you'll see, they're called haricot vert, which is a French filet bean. And it is a little thinner than your standard American green bean and usually more tender. Mm-hmm. You can often find those in the farmer's market. The other thing, there's another culinary term called Frenching the beans, which is really, it's a little beyond the pale, but it's where you take a string bean and you cut it long ways and make it thinner and thinner. And there is actually a kitchen gizmo that you can clamp on your table and run it through if you want to French your green beans. I personally have never done it. I think it's rather tedious, but there are people who like that sort of
thing. It takes all kinds.
It is. So Alice Waters has a wonderful recipe for pickled yellow wax beans. And one thing she says, and I would tend to agree here, unlike green beans, yellow wax beans retain an appetizing color when pickled. They are delicious by themselves or as part of an aioli platter. So she's just saying, you can pickle them and put them out on your cheese plate or for appetizers. We do pickle green beans, but they turn sort of gray. And so that is the nice thing about the yellow wax beans is that they stay a pretty color. So she takes her recipe. I'm just going to quickly read it through. Is 1/2 pound of yellow wax beans, 2 cloves of garlic, 1/2 teaspoon of coriander seed, 1 small hot chili, 1/8 teaspoon black peppercorn, 1 bay leaf, 2 cups white vinegar or apple cider vinegar, 1 cup dry white wine, 1 1/2 cups, 1/4 of water, 1 tablespoon of kosher salt, 2 tablespoons of sugar. So her methodology is basically, clean up the green beans, stuff them in the jar, usually vertically. They look nice like that with the coriander seeds, the chili, the garlic, the peppercorns, and the bay leaf. Then in the pan, you boil the white wine vinegar with 1 cup of white wine, which I think is an excellent inclusion. The white wine, usually people just do the vinegar and the water and the salt and the sugar. So you bring it to a boil, a good boil for a minute. Then you just pour it over the beans in the can. You completely cool it at room temperature. Then you cover and refrigerate. She said they will be ready within 48 hours, and they're better even if you leave them a week in the refrigerator. So that's a quick non-canned method for making. I think I'm going to try this one.
Well, actually, I love wax beans just to eat them. Pickled wax beans are good. But to make enough just to go in the refrigerator, you will eat them all up, really. I've made them and canned them, and it's one of those things I keep on my shelf and never get around to using. It's best to eat them up right away. It's like, oh, well.
I know. I think I have some pickled okra that I really am going to have to throw out because it's probably 5 years old sitting in the pantry. You get excited about it at the time, and then I'm for just eating it right away.
Very good. Putting things in the refrigerator. And that's good. Now, this, you do not cook the wax beans first, huh? I would be surprised.
Well, because usually they're a little more tender, especially if you've picked them before they get too dried out, right? She suggests picking them while they're still tinged with green. And I trust Alice on this one. I think she knows what she's talking about. Another book where I looked up is Clifford Wright's Mediterranean Vegetable Book. He reminds us that green beans were brought from the New World on Columbus's second voyage to the Mediterranean in 1493. 1493.
Oh, okay.
So they came from the New World to the Mediterranean. And he also, Clifford reminds us that our own Iowa Seed Savers Exchange has over 4,000 varieties of beans in its collection, and they're still counting.
Oh,
so there are a lot of kinds of beans. The dried beans and the green beans, they are the same plant.
Beans are relatively easy to grow if you can kind of dissuade the other critters, sort of like beans too. And I like to try different kinds. And I do save the bean seeds, especially from the pole beans, because you don't need many to start another bunch next year. And I do dry dry, or some I let go until the bean pods are all dry. And then you have dry beans to save. It's amazing. It's amazing how that works.
And, of course, all these beans are nitrogen-producing in the soil.
Ah, good idea.
Good for your garden.
Good. I have a recipe to share from Ottolenghi Flavor Cookbook. And this is how I like to – we make beans like this at our house – green beans like this at our house all the time. And I didn't realize it was part of a fancy schmancy recipe book because I didn't use a recipe for it. But most green beans, this tradition of just to steam them or blanch them.
Yeah, and eat them with a little crunch to them still. But that's one way to do it.
But they're also wonderful when cooked longer and a little slower, starting out with sauteing them, actually kind of char them, throw them in a hot pan, and actually let them kind of get brown and crunchy on a side or two. You can put some onion and garlic in there too. And you could cook them for a while. Now, this Ottolenghi flavor book suggests be sure to ventilate your kitchen. Don't let things start on fire, but things could get a little smoky here because you put
charring.
Yeah, you put the green beans into the hot pan in a cast iron skillet. Looks good for this. And then actually you can just add olive oil and butter and let it cook like that for a while with the cover on. Or this one has got all kinds of nice things added. 12 garlic cloves, what's not to like? 1 green chili, olive oil, onions, vegetable or chicken stock to let it kind of cook in later. And lemons, zest the lemons and put in some lemon juice. Oh, that'd be good. And some tarragon leaves, dill fronds, and parsley. Now, that is good.
Yeah, I saw a number of Mediterranean or Middle Eastern dishes like that, which is a real low, slow cooking. Mm-hmm. And the beans, you know, it's very different from Alice Waters' California New Cuisine, quick, green, crispy. You know, beans are very versatile. They just can go all over the place.
Yes, they can. And speaking of all over the place, you mentioned beans being brought from the New World to the Old World. The Old World had things like fava beans and lentils.
Which are not in the same family.
But sort of beanish, mm-hmm. sort of. But they didn't have beans. Beans are from the Americas. And we often think of when beans get older and bigger and you can do things like dried beans and cook things down. Baked beans, barbecued beans. The concept of Boston baked beans, that kind of beans with a little sweet, a little molasses put into them. That is a very New England sort of thing. Baked beans, a dish of navy beans stewed until glazed in tomato sauce, sweetened with molasses, and commonly salt pork or bacon, is generally associated with New England, as in Boston baked beans. It's been said the dish comes from Native Americans, but scholars have argued that New England sea captains brought the idea from Africa, where baked beans called skana, have long been a Sabbath tradition among North African and Spanish Jews. Aha! And it is, baked beans are, I guess it's a very American
Well, you know, you remember historically the three sisters of almost all of the native North American cuisines are squash, beans, and corn.
Mm-hmm.
So, and how they grew them together.
Yeah.
Supposedly, so the beans could grow up the corn stalks. And then, of course, the beans are adding the nitrogen to the soil as well. So it's an old, old human edible.
I actually remember to do that in a little corner of my garden just to see how it's going. And things, yeah, the beans are going up the corn. And actually, I have a sunflower in there too. But and there's some squash trying to get in there. It's kind of nice to not be so neat and tidy once.
Well, apparently in the coastal Indians, they also stuck a dead fish in the bottom of the, you know, underneath it so it would decompose and fertilize.
That'd work out pretty darn well, I would think. Yes, it would. I want to remind people that this is the Donalana Kitchen. This is KHOI Community Radio. This is Donalana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa.
Summertime and the living is easy. Fish are jumping and the cotton is high. Oh, your daddy's rich, your mama's good looking. So hush, little baby, don't you cry. One of these mornings, you're gonna rise up singing. And then you'll spread your wings and take to the sky. But till that morning, there's nothing can harm you. With mama and daddy standing by.
Welcome back. This is the Donna Lena Kitchen. Ah, summertime. And we live in interesting times in this summertime. Rain, no rain, fire, floods, tornadoes. And in between all of that, the earth still hands us miracles every day. We had a good friend that shared the bounty of her apricot trees this week. And apricots don't always happen. There's things.
Now Marilyn gets them about what every 4 years or something. Yeah. There's a bumper crop. Oh yeah. My goodness, they're so good.
This is the apricot window, and talk about a miracle. How nice.
Well, they are really. They are. We ate them too, but they are really good cooking apricots.
Yeah.
They just make wonderful. All right, I have to brag on Lana. She made an apricot tart on Sunday that was, oh,
isn't it
just
good?
Just that classic where she, it's not, you know,
it's not a pie.
It's not a pie.
It's called the galette, which means it's a pie crust that's kind of folded over. So it looks rustic.
Right. It's rustic. Flat. And then you just put the apricots in and then fold the edges of the pie crust over, and she sprinkled a little sugar on it and baked it on a cookie sheet. And oh, it was so delicious. Now, did you have to put any cornstarch or anything?
Yeah, I did, because considering it's a flat sort of.
Yeah, it would run all over.
It still runs all over.
And they were juicy apricots. Oh, they really, really were.
I never worry about using cornstarch. You should put some in. I don't like things all over the inside of my stove. So the oven would be full of apricots. Well,
and she cooked it on her Silpat, her silicone baking, which really helps. Then the sticky stuff, you can actually peel it up and it tastes good. The other thing I did, I made some apricot jam out of those apricots, and I put some leaves from the lemon verbena plant in it, which was also very nice.
Very nice.
Yes.
Yeah, a little bit of tart is good.
Yeah, they're really good.
We've been talking about beans, and we didn't get around to probably one of the
main classic bean dish.
Summer, Midwest.
What did your grandmother make? Three bean salad.
Have at it, Donna.
Well, just a classic is wonderful. So the normal one is green beans, wax beans, and what? Kidney beans. A can of kidney beans, right? I think it's nice to switch the beans up. You know, you can make it with Romano beans and something else. And you don't have to certainly use kidney beans. You can use any old bean you choose. Like, I think a cannellini bean is really good. However, I would say people would probably use chickpeas, but it's not a bean. I'm sorry. That is transgressing a little too far for me. I also think it's a good place to throw in a lot of fresh herbs, like chopped basil, maybe some lovage, some dill, certainly, if you still have it, or tarragon, or any old thing. It's a lovely vehicle for, and of course, I like to put, well, I like to put raw onions in, but what I do with the onions is I slice them very finely, and I try to find a sweeter onion, either a red or a, you know, one of the sweet onions. And then I sit it in a little bit of vinegar for like 20 or 30 minutes. And that kind of takes the heat out of the onion enough to, you don't go, ooh, it's raw onions. You more have a lightly pickled onion in the three bean salad. So, olive oil and vinegar. And if the vinegar had the pickled onions in it, so much the better. You can just make infinite varieties of three bean salad. You could use four beans, for goodness sake.
Oh, what did you think? Do you think? Oh.
Well, then you have to call it four bean salad, I guess, when you serve it. But yeah. Anyway. So bean salad, it's a wonderful time of year for bean salad.
Good. Oh, beans, endless possibilities. Just have fun, have fun. I do like to try new things in my garden. And one of the new things I am trying, you see all kinds of things in the seed catalogs. I ran across something called a garden huckleberry. Now, huckleberry is traditionally a bush, a perennial bush, sort of like a blueberry, and they grow in the Rocky Mountain states. We don't have huckleberry bushes around here. There's like a blueberry, sort of. But this is called a garden huckleberry, and surprise, surprise, it is an annual. And more surprise, it is a nightshade. It is an annual. You grow it like a tomato, and it looks pretty much like a tomato, or a nightshade sort of thing.
The huckleberry does not look like a tomato.
No,
right?
The plant is called Solanum, Solanaceae. Family, like tomatoes and other things. Solanum melanocerisum. It's one of the nightshades. Grows about 2.5 feet tall or larger. And you can start like a tomato plant, which I did. And I put it in and I said, yeah, there it is. Actually, it sort of looks like a tomatilla, a little leggier than a tomato, a little more airy. Okay. And I watched it grow. Believe it or not, it starts to put on little green berries, and little green berries turn into little, very dark purple, blackish berries, tiny little berries.
Yeah, they almost look, they're currant-like, but a little smaller than a currant.
And they don't have much seed in them. And Donna is eating some right now. Now, this is pretty good. If you don't have time to wait for your currant bush.
Right, they are not tart like a berry.
No.
And they're a little watery in the way a mulberry is.
I thought they tasted like mulberries. However, okay, so my first season.
But they have a pleasant flavor.
My first season of growing them, I realized they turn black and shiny, and yes, you can eat them, and that's fine. However, what is supposed to be really good is if you wait until they're really super ripe. So they're starting to actually kind of wrinkle a little bit, like teeny tiny raisins. They're supposed to be really, really good. So if you can't wait for your trees or
bushes, once you wait for them, then what are you supposed to do with them?
Then they're absolutely, you treat them like a blueberry. You can make, add
sugar. So you bake with them maybe or something like that.
Bake with them.
Huh.
Yeah. Add a third cup sugar per quart of berries, and you can put them over ice cream.
All right, Lana, I'm expecting those huckleberry muffins in about a month or so.
Actually, that'll be good. Now, three plants probably won't give me a whole bunch, and I've been eating these little things. they're actually very good to graze on. You know, you mm-hmm. go in the garden, eat the cherry tomatoes, and I've been eating these. But it is a wonderful... Well, wonderful find. I mean, you can get berries, and they are berries.
In one season, you
in
can
In one
guess.
Season. And next year, I'm going to see if I can save the seeds, although can find the seeds at different seed sources. You can get them from Gurney Seeds has them, Stokes Seeds has them, and a place called Farmer Seed and Nursery has
now,
seeds.
Now, if they're an annual and they're a berry, will they drop seeds and just come back by themselves?
Well, we shall see. This is my first. I would think they would, because tomatoes self-seed too. So we shall see. We shall see. Okay. I also have another thing that I learned this year. And remember I said that garden huckleberries are nightshades. Here is something that is related to a nightshade, although this is of the pest variety. I was visited this year by the multicolored three-lined potato beetle. Actually, the three-lined potato beetle attacked my tomatilla plants. And tomatillas are also part of this nightshade family. And I noticed them because Nick Odie said, check out your tomatillas. I've got an infestation. You might have one too. And I did. Something was eating the leaves, not just nibbling. They were like totally eating all the leaves off my tomatillas. And what was left was you could see the little larva. I never did see a potato beetle. They lay their little eggs, and these larvae absolutely are voracious on the leaves. And the little larvae were hanging there, chewing around, and they looked juicy. They were yellow and wet looking.
Are they round or worm-like?
They're worm-like, but they were amazingly wet. It was like they were jelly and yuck. So, okay. Then I started to look up what a three-lined potato beetle and its larva was. That wetness, that slimy thing, this is one of the ways the potato beetle larva protect themselves. And those little sweet little things, they carry all their excrement on their back. This is the kind of thing you want to know. And so it was not only eating things, it was just all slimy looking and awful. Luckily, this is a quick alive and dead sort of thing. And it lasted maybe a week, and I did go through and take off all of the icky bits. And So I did save quite a few.
How do you take them off?
Hands, squish. Or you could, in this case, I just broke off all the leaves that were full of these little things, and I fed them to the chickens. Chickens.
Oh, recycling at its best. Okay.
So look for your striped. There's a lot of beetles or potato beetles.
Okay, does that mean they beetles. were they on the potatoes also? Or they-
I looked because you, I did find them. I said, okay, what else have we got here? I didn't find any on tomato leaves. Okay, that's good. However, they were on my ground cherry plants. But not as they evidently like the tomatillas the best. They were just chomping those down. I was able to squash them and remove them from the.
So is this a short season thing, or are you going to have to be watching vigilantly the rest of the summer for that?
I will watch vigilantly. I am always vigilant, but I have not seen them back. They were there for about a week. Just a week in all their slimy glory in early June, and I was watching, and I haven't seen them come back. But boy, did they eat a lot of tomatilla leaves. Actually, some plants, there were sticks left. But I do have tomatillas left, and I did get them off of the other nightshades and kind of look and see. You could see them because the eggs are bright yellow, the little larvae are not only bright yellow, they're juicy looking, juicy. And we know why that is.
Okay? Well, this is the thing about organic gardening. Mm-hmm. When you don't just whip out the pesticide and blast the whole thing, you have to be vigilant. There's an old saying about having eyes to acres for organic farming, because if you catch these things, if you're paying attention as a gardener, you can catch them before they have bred to some out of control state.
I try to remind myself, I'm a lot bigger than they are. I may not be smarter, but I'm bigger. And I've learned to squash things pretty well.
Yes, you have to be as determined as they are in their evolutionary march there. So
people have been, I suppose in some places you could really be a terrible, terrible problem. They have tried diatomaceous earth and neem oil. Yeah, sort of works, sort of. And it's developing resistance to commercial herbicides. Some squishing.
Yeah, they do that. They're rather clever little buggers.
And encouraging birds and bats is actually a good thing too. But actually the squishing them and putting things into a pail of soapy water, it's a very rewarding sort of feeling when you can go out there.
Speaking of rewarding, what's the beetle that's out now?
The Japanese beetles.
The Japanese beetles, knockwood. They, I, I, I've had some, but not as bad as some years. Maybe the dryness they don't like. I don't know.
We've got them pretty bad. We have been trying beetle traps, and that works out well because we just dump the beetle traps to the chickens, and the chickens love the beetles. However, they are still pretty hard on my raspberry bushes. We shall see. Those things kind of come and go, too, and that is something else that I've learned to just kind of go through the raspberry patch and squash by the handful.
Well, that's what I've been doing. Yeah, it's kind of a yucky thing, but there is a certain satisfaction to it. Like, I've got a whole bunch of morning glories that come along my front fence. They love the morning glories.
They like certain things.
Maybe the morning glories are saving everything else. But I have found that if I catch them and squish them and leave some of the detritus on the plants, it seems to discourage them.
Yeah. I'd be discouraged if I came back.
Yeah, and found dead bodies of my kin all over. Yeah.
So you learn new things. So my new thing, my new thing this year is garden huckleberries. And they were easy to grow. If you can grow a tomato, you can grow these things. And they're worth looking into. If nothing else, even if I don't get around to making a garden huckleberry pie, I still don't mind. I like things that in the garden that I can just graze on. Yes, it's very good.
Oh, speaking of the new things that we've tried this year, I want to report Lana and I were trying some new varieties of anise hyssop.
Ah.
And this what was the one with the more chartreusey colored leaves?
Golden Giant or something.
Golden Giant. It's doing magnificent. Yes. I've put some in my outdoor pots and some in my garden. And then my regular anise hyssop, which I love because it always pops up in surprising places because it is self-seeding and the seeds tend to blow around. And every year it comes up in new spots all over. And I have quite a lot of it. And it's very much in bloom right now and very pretty and very good bee attractant.
Yeah.
So three cheers for the anise hyssop.
Isn't that nice when that happens?
Yeah.
Good things happening in the garden, and the bugs are doing their thing, but you just have to kind of
make accommodations.
Accommodations, yes. You're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is community radio at its tastiest. You can find out more at www.khoifm.org. Our show and lots of other good stuff, too.
Daddy's standing by.
This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We always learn new things if we garden, and we learn new things in the kitchen, too. Yes, we do. Even if we grow some of our own food in the garden or wherever we want to grow our own food on the patio, we still visit the grocery store. Donna, some words of wisdom about the grocery store.
Yeah, well, I was reading an article lately, and I thought, yeah, this is something we need to reiterate. It's about the sell-by dates on all of packaged food. And this is a real, this is from Vox, and the headline was, "Assume everything you assume about date labels is probably wrong." And this is true because there's no standardization of it. So some things say when it's best if used by, or some actually give the date that it was made very rarely. Some give the date when there's it's considered an expiration date. But what the truth is, there are two vital facts to know about date labels on food in the U.S. They're not standardized, and they have almost nothing to do with food safety.
Huh.
So basically, date labels started following World War II, as Americans were like, you know, we were getting our first Piggly Wigglies in supermarkets. And, you know, if you're not buying from a small local business, you need to, you know, want to know, well, the groceries wanted to know how to rotate their stocks.
Because, well, also about that time, we were getting things in packages and cans, and you don't quite know what's on the
right
inside.
And they started with cans by putting a date so that the grocery stores were actually, of course, wanting to sell the oldest stuff first. That's called rotating your stock. It makes sense. And then what happened was, eventually the producers saw that the shoppers actually wanted to know what those, and it was a sort of a secret code so that only the grocers could read. So, but they figured out, the producers, that the consumers really wanted to know, because they were trying to buy the freshest possible thing. So then it became a marketing thing. But it still, and to this day, doesn't always tell you if the food is still no longer good for you. So, and different states have different laws. Like I know in Ames at Food at First, there is a lot of food that is recycled from some of our local grocery stores to be used in food pantries and things like that, which is a good use of it, because there's nothing wrong with this food. You know, they're just not selling it after the sell by date, so they give it away. Lots of places it just goes into the landfill. It's a lot of food waste. And as consumers, if you're going through your fridge and looking at the sell by date and throwing things out based on the date that's on the carton, no, don't do that. You are wasting a lot of really, really good food. What really, this is a little thing, a little saying to remember: look, smell, taste, don't waste. So look at the food. If it's got visible mold growing on it, well, yeah, probably time to pitch it. Smell it, particularly with meats and dairy and highly perishable things. You can smell it when it's off. Trust your nose. If it smells funny, you know, don't eat it. The other thing you can do on some things, if you take a teeny weeny taste, it's not enough that's going to make you sick. But, you know, like on a salsa, for example, or some other things where it starts to taste off or a little too acid or a little too fermented or funky, you know, then you know. But trust yourself. Don't just automatically assume that if it's past the date on the carton. I mean, because let's face it, these companies would just as soon you throw it out and come and buy another one.
That's true.
You know, so you're wasting your own money. You're contributing to landfill. I mean, in this country, we all know that we, even though we have lots of hungry people, we waste food. I'm sorry, it's unethical, right?
Yeah.
So remember, trust your own senses. Look at the food, smell it, and then taste it. And don't waste it.
That's true. And we didn't always have refrigerators. I mean, and ways to preserve food. Like we dry food, we preserve food, we freeze food. You do have to trust your nose. I happen to be in a household where my significant other always opens the refrigerator door, takes out something. Here, Lana, smell this. So I'm kind of the house smeller. And I have a good nose. You practice these.
That's
sort of
true.
Thing.
And you do know. And now I do have a saying for myself. It's along these lines. It's if in doubt, don't. So yeah. If you're smelling it and you kind of go, I'm not sure, you know, we had a funny little story. Okay. One of my housemates bought a really nice little steak that was in a vacuum packed, you know, package. So it wasn't the kind just wrapped in paper, right? So it was vacuum packed, which means it's going to have less air and possibilities of contamination. Well, when she was unpacking her grocery bag, she forgot it in the bottom of the bag. And then the next day, here she is looking all over. Where's my steak? Where's my steak? I don't know. So she goes and she finds that it is, of course, in her closet in the bag, right? 24 hours later, she was ready to throw it out. I said, oh, just don't do it. Let's open it up and smell it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And sure enough, it was just fine. I mean, I'm not recommending this as a storage method, but we smelled it and it was just fine. And I said, at the very least, if it's, you know, if it's a little iffy, we'll feed it to the dog, because dogs do have different digestive processes and they can take more higher levels of bacterial contamination than humans can. But turns out we sauteed that steak up and it was delicious. So
there you go.
You gotta look at it and smell it, especially with meat and dairy products.
Yeah, that's a good story there. I was thinking of beans. It seems beans, even if they're cooked beans or refried beans, my experience is that their shelf life isn't all that great. It's because I think that they must be the perfect breeding ground for things. You can have some beans the night before. Maybe give it 2 or 3 days. Even the refrigerator always smell the beans. I think they tend to go off a bit, but that's what your nose is for.
Good.
Very good. Have we covered beans?
We were full of beans today, I guess.
We did. Wax beans and pickled beans and bush beans and shell beans and dry beans.
I am so sorry to hear about your Romano beans. Oh. Those are just my favorite.
Yeah, and I did plant out all. By the time I get seeds here from the seed house, it better be too.
Well, but somebody does have them at the farmer's market. I can't remember who, but I have purchased some this year already. Thank those goodness. Good.
I always like Romano beans. I always say they're good because they have a large surface area for more butter.
They do. And they have a distinct flavor from the rest of the green bean family.
Yeah.
They're like a little bit richer and creamier.
Describe the taste of
creamy
beans.
Nutty.
I like them. They're good.
Now we do have coming up, the tomatoes are on the way.
I picked a few and I've got the irrigation on my little tomato patch today, and we'll see what she does. We do need rain here. I know we had tornadoes and rain, and some places the state of Iowa got dumps of rain. My farm got half an inch. If any of those storms would like to kind of like put a little extra rain on my garden, that would be
fine. California and start piping the water all over the place.
I'm pumping water from my well. Our farm has our own well, and I am pumping that up under. I've got 5 irrigation lines.
Use drip irrigation?
Yeah, drip irrigation out, and it's all well mulched and everything. But food takes energy, and it takes effort, and it takes water. And 3 cheers to everybody who is growing their own this year.
Well, and even our major conventional crops, like there, you don't see a lot of irrigation hoops out on the corn and soybean fields in Iowa. You do see some in Illinois. You do see some in Minnesota. But Iowa just has not been an irrigation state, and hopefully we can stay that way.
Yeah. Remember, there's a lot of water underneath everything, and if we are careful with it.
And don't contaminate it too badly.
Yes.
Oh, the other thing's coming. I bought my first local melon.
Oh.
Typical musk melon. It could have been a little bit riper, but it was, first of all, it smelled heavenly. Just bringing it home in the car and the heat, it was like everything was perfumed from it. I do love a good melon.
Melons, the joy of summer. Maybe we can talk a bit about melons next week. So, tune in to Donalana Kitchen next week, because we'll have to kind of have our gander at the list of Iowa State Fair foods that are coming up. I'm sure they're lovely. Whatever can be done on a stick. We'll just kind of look it over and react. Donna will probably hoot and holler, but we shall see. We shall see. And Donna wants to talk about black currants too. There are other, despite the drought and the heat, there are other things that are coming besides my 3 little garden huckleberry plants, the crab apples, and apples are looking pretty good.
Yeah, this could be a good apple year.
And if I can get the bugs off my raspberries, I just may have some raspberries. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We are come to you Tuesdays at noon. We repeated at 7 p.m. on this fine radio station, or you can go to khofm.org and you can listen to past shows and download us and put us on your device and whatever you want to do. You can find past shows there. You had music today by the musician Patty Casey singing the George Gershwin tune Summertime. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
As usual, we've had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.
Summertime, and the living is easy. Fish are jumping, and the cotton is high. Oh, your daddy's rich, your mama's good looking. So hush, little baby, don't.